Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's Brian Lehrer, and this is my Daily Politics Podcast from WNYC Studios. It's Friday, May 1st. Today is May Day, also known as International Workers' Day, and also being labeled today as Essential Workers' Day. It's a bigger holiday in many other countries than it is here, but this year is different, obviously. Never in any of our lifetimes, I don't think, has there been a more extreme crisis labor situation than there is today, or one that lays bare as much of the structural inequality in our country. There are one-day strikes and boycotts going on in various places today, and calls for doing more right now to protect and pay fairly the largely working class, largely black and brown, largely ignored in normal times, workers who other people are realizing in new ways keep them safe and keep them fed, not to mention keep their hair cut and their gym equipment working. According to the business news website Fast Company, a May Day general strike will unite employees at Amazon, Whole Foods, Instacart, Target, Shipt, FedEx, and Walmart in a single sprawling effort. An organizer's press release, cited by The Intercept, says workers, mostly non-unionized, given their employers' notorious union-busting reputations, will call in sick or walk off the job during their lunch break, picketing outside their warehouses and storefronts today. Joining me now is Jane McAlevey, organizer, senior policy fellow at the University of California at Berkeley's Labor Center. She is a correspondent for The Nation, who covers labor and especially strikes, and author of a book that came out just this year. She was here for a book interview, A Collective Bargain, Unions, Organizing, and the Fight for Democracy. Jane, always good to have you on. Welcome back to WNYC.
Thank you, Brian. It's always good to be on your show.
So your new article in The Nation today begins with some history about why we celebrate Labor Day in September in this country while it's May 1st in much more of the world. And we don't mention President Grover Cleveland's name much on this show. So would you tell us some of the origins of May Day and how the United States went its own way?
Yeah, sure. I don't mention Grover Cleveland very often either, except when you dig into the particular history of why it is that the United States sits as an outlier on when we celebrate workers. So essentially, the history of this day, which is a paid day off, like a real holiday throughout most of Europe and most of the world. There are 66 countries that officially celebrate today as sort of what we think of as Labor Day. And what happened that led to it was there was a decision in the 1884, right? So we're going back two centuries. In 1884, what would become essentially the American Federation of Labor, the precursor to it, declared at the convention in 1884 that starting on May 1st, 1886, the official workday would only be 8 hours. So workers were demanding a cut in hours for the same rate of pay. This is 1884. The declaration was, you know, they wanted a year and a half to prepare for it. Mm-hmm. And so on May 1st, 1886, hundreds of thousands, and you think about the numbers in the country at that time, that's like millions today, hundreds of thousands of workers all across America walked off their jobs on May 1st, 1886. A series of actions happened in Chicago where some of the biggest protests happened. There was a lockout. 2 days later, workers returned to what was called Haymarket Square to protest the killing of some strikers the day before. Essentially, someone threw a bomb into the police, and what happened in the ensuing melee, there's never been any evidence literally to this date about who did this bomb, but four of the worker organizers were quickly convicted and hung to death in Chicago, and another four workers were convicted to also be executed on no evidence at all. And in response to that, international unions across the world declared a day of solidarity with American workers. That's the irony is this day, which is celebrated across the world as a paid official holiday celebrating workers, was declared to support American workers. So several years later, Grover Cleveland, the president in 1990, 1893 declares 1893. Yeah. Thanks. 1893 declares, and in the midst of suppressing the Pullman strike and some massive strikes that were going on that were heavily involving African Americans, by the way, he declares we better do something. So he suddenly just declares that there's going to be Labor Day, the first Monday of September every year, and it's understood historically to be a direct attempt to separate American workers from our colleagues internationally. And it was also explicitly back then created because the Democrats were taking heat for suppressing strikes or not doing much to help workers in them. So they thought, we're going to pass this day called Labor Day. So that the long history is we have been separated from our international counterparts, for more than a century. And the truth is...
Mm-hmm, yes. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, and the strikes that are being declared today by workers who... in fact, are delivering our food, are delivering our products, are delivering everything to everyone sitting at home, if you have the luxury to be sitting at home in shelter in place under this COVID disaster, are the very workers who are being fired on the front lines right now trying to stand up for themselves to say that we need some personal protective equipment, we need some rights on the job, we need the ability to have sick leave, sick pay. This country is so out of control compared to other global sort of northern countries. The idea that there isn't a national vacation law, that there isn't national paid sick day, that we don't have national health insurance, that we don't, all the other social societal norms that exist in most of Europe, Canada, and a lot of what we think of as the global north countries simply don't exist here. And I think most workers aren't aware of it. So it's great that the Amazon workers and the Whole Foods workers and the Instacart workers are declaring that it's the beginning of the end. Like they need to start taking to the streets. And the last thing I'll say about this is, in the new book, and I'm not sure we got there in the book interview, in the new book, I say in the opening chapter, I quote some research about what the conditions were in the auto plants in the United States in 1933. There's lots of mm-hmm. academic literature. Right. What was going on in the auto plants in this country? People think of auto plants as these great jobs now, right? So what was happening in 1933 when unemployment was the same it is now, right? 1933, there was no union. There was no United Auto Workers as we know it today. The auto plants were safety violation upon safety violation, workers being crushed, workers are working irregular hours, workers had no rights on the job. And I essentially say, they look just like what an Amazon warehouse looks like today. There are huge injuries in Amazon warehouses. The workers have virtually no rights, as Christian Smalls will tell you. You get fired for simply, demanding protective equipment when you are literally making Jeff Bezos, he has earned $25 billion. Billion since COVID started, and he doesn't give his workers sick days and he hires union busters to fire them. It is 1933 in America's auto factories. It's just that they're the Amazon factories today, and it's going to take the same bold action that those workers are taking today, and it's not going to happen overnight, and it's not going to happen in one May Day, but it's going to take consistent militant action by growing numbers of people who work for Amazon and Whole Foods, since he owns them both now, and every other company like them, before workers can start to have the kind of voice on the job that they deserve and that they have in many other countries.
And people in this country may not realize that May Day is so big around much of the rest of the industrialized world that stock markets are closed in a lot of other countries today, even that representing the ownership class, obviously. You mentioned the history of 1933. We had also invited for this segment, but he couldn't do it. The New York Times columnist Jamel Bowie, I just recommend people to his article, as well as our guest Jane McAlevey's article in The Nation. Jamel Bowie, New York Times columnist, his column the other day, describing 1934 in particular as a potential parallel when there were a lot of strikes that year in America, and that helped lead to some of the major labor laws that we have in this country today. Jane, I know you've written and talked in the past about how customers can support workers, and I wonder if you would talk about that today. Want to talk about some of the ways that people who are not these workers but maybe have a new appreciation or even just an ongoing appreciation for the people we now call essential workers, how people can support them?
Yes, definitely. First of all, today they're calling for everyone to boycott Amazon. Please don't order anything online today. They're not asking for this permanently. They're asking for a single day right now to show Jeff Bezos that consumers are paying attention to the healthcare crisis that's taking place and the injury crisis that's taking place in the Amazon factories. They're asking people not to shop at Whole Foods today because Whole Foods is engaged in every bit of serious union busting as Amazon. Again, it's the same owner now. It's Jeff Bezos. That's one thing is today in particular, heed the boycott call of the workers who are taking their lives into their own hands to literally make it so that many of us can stay home. So today is a day of boycott, officially one day all day. That's one. Two, an unmet need in this country is that in the turn of the last century, meaning in the early 1900s, we had a very, very strong consumer league. We had a very strong consumer movement. I cover all of this in the book, as well as, and I agree with Jamal, as well as, you know, I have a whole chapter about 1933 and 1934 and the wave of illegal strikes that began across this country that led to the passage in 1935 of the National Labor Relations Act. But even before that, in 1906, 1904, 1908, 1911, huge massive strike by the International Ladies Garment Workers between Boston and New York City. This is 100 plus years ago. Part of why those workers, the few workers that were succeeding in leading large unionization campaigns in the early 1900s, is precisely because those unions built and developed a robust, sophisticated consumer organization. That, remember the old idea of like, look for the union label? I mean, it depends on the generation of who's listening. But there was a song that was popularized by the International Ladies Garment Workers Union. And as someone who grew up in New York, just like WNYC is part of my historic culture, also that song is part of something that I remember. I mean, I grew up in a very pro-union, union activist household. Both of my parents were involved in the labor movement. So
that phrase or that jingle was basically arguing the customers should stand in solidarity with the workers who make their clothing and other things.
Absolutely. And it was utilized very effectively by the International Ladies Garment Workers Union in the early 1900s. They were one of the few unions that were really having success. People in this country, you know, we don't know our labor history very well. There was very little unionization in the early 1900s. And one of the unions that did it best was the International Ladies Garment Workers Union, because they had a deliberate strategy of building community and consumer support around the strikes and the actions that they were taking. So too, it was true about things like the cigar makers. There were a whole series of what we called quote unquote, moderately skilled workers in the early part of the last century who were being effective, unionizing at a time when it was, you know, almost as impossible as it is to do today, right? So everything that's old is new again. And we are right back in this country where we were a long time ago. And that's really problematic. And it's going to take the same strategies to fight our way back into dignity for workers and the working class in this country.
Also with us for a few minutes now is Chris Smalls, whose story has become a rallying cry for frontline essential workers since he was fired from his Staten Island Amazon warehouse job in March. He says for attempting to organize workers for pandemic-era safety measures, they say for violating his 14-day quarantine. Chris, I know you're very involved with May Day actions today, so thanks very much for giving us a few minutes. Welcome to WNYC.
Thank you for having me. Thank you.
Any report from the front line so far today on the extent of the strike against some of the major companies we've been talking about with Jane McAlevey?
Yeah, we're ready. Everybody's motivated. They're up getting ready to move out and mobilize, including myself. You know, I've been doing the interviewing since 4 o'clock this morning. I just got the line with Germany. This is international, something that hasn't been done before. But it's very necessary. So I'm happy to have orchestrated this. This is something unprecedented, but it's very relevant to this pandemic. And I think today is going to be historical.
Amazon says you were fired for violating your 14-day quarantine, which was company policy to protect your fellow workers after you had come in contact with an infected colleague. What's your version of that?
Yeah, I know. I came in contact with the infected employee because their policies allowed the infected employee to come to work. I sent her home. You know, if it wasn't me sending her home that day, she would have been around the employees that we supervised for another 10-hour shift. They didn't quarantine none of the employees that were exposed to her for 10 hours. They didn't even quarantine the person that I ride to work with every single day. So that tells you right there that they just quarantined me to silence me. They had no reason to really quarantine me because I was only around her for 5 minutes and I was a distance and protected, 6 feet and protected. But I know why they did it, to put a target on me and to silence me and silence this movement. But it did the complete opposite.
I saw where Vice News reported last month that they obtained leaked notes from an Amazon leadership meeting that said, as part of Amazon's PR strategy, that they would try to describe you as not smart or articulate, and that to the extent the press wants to focus on us versus him, we'll be in a much stronger PR position than trying to explain for the umpteenth time how we're trying to protect workers. That's a quote, according to Vice News, from Amazon General Counsel David Zapolsky in notes from that meeting. But that was April 2nd. How's it gone since?
Well, yeah, just speaking on that, you know, they wanted to make me the face of the whole union organizations. That's exactly what I am now today, but I'm not a part of a union, but I'm a part of the employees and the front lines. That's where I was going. It's been going great because now we were able to form this alliance that is speaking truth to power. That's obviously why they had that meeting. It exposed who Jeff Bezos is, who they have around them, what type of conversations they have. And it's disgraceful, but at the same time, we all know the truth now, and it's never going to be Amazon versus Chris Small. It's going to be Amazon versus the people, and today is a display of that. They got to answer to all of us.
And with Jane McAlevey from The Nation and former Amazon worker and now organizer Chris Smalls, let's take another phone call. Patricia in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hello, Patricia.
Yes, good morning, Brian. I have a question for either one of your guests. I read in today's New York Times that the profits for Amazon, and I can't remember if it was for the last quarter or for this current quarter, were down about $1.5 billion. And Jeff Bezos was quoted as saying the reason for that is that, notwithstanding that Amazon has been so busy during the pandemic, that they've had to spend a lot of money for worker protection, for PPEs, and that kind of thing. And I wonder how that squares with the fact that your first guest said that he's made so much money during this period of time, or with your second guest's experience as a worker.
Yeah, I can answer that.
Go ahead, Chris.
Well, yeah, they spend so much money thanks to me. All the things they've done now is after my termination. The entire month of March, they did nothing for us. They had no temperature checking equipment for none of these buildings. Actually, JFK in Staten Island is the pilot. That was the first building to implement that. The facial mask that they provide now is because of me as well. We didn't have no mask in the month of March. This all started in the month of April. The reason why they spent this money is because I exposed them to what they weren't doing. And when they terminated me, they tried to silence me, but the media, the platform that I had, continued to follow me, and I would continue to spread the truth. So as a response to their, you know, they do their own PR stunts. That's what they've been doing. They've been spending money on try to implement all these safety guidelines. So, you know, in a way, I kind of won that battle.
So how much better is it? I mean, everybody's striking who's striking today, still in part for more protection. But how much would you say that battle has been won?
Well, you got to think about it. We were unprotected for so long that it's been a number of people that have contracted the virus that work with this company now. This company has a large workforce. It's 600,000 people nationwide, 175 buildings, fulfillment centers alone. You know how many cases have contracted this virus? We don't know. But I could tell you right now, we could put a number on it. We have a team that's been tracking. This company's ran by metrics. So we had a team that's been tracking. There's been over 600 cases nationwide in over 150 buildings. And JFK alone, as we speak, there's about 50 to 60 cases. When I first protested, it was less than 10. So that tells you right there that we already were carriers, asymptomatic carriers. That's the reason why I tried to speak up. I wanted to be proactive instead of reactive.
Jacob Atlantic Highlands, New Jersey. You're on WNYC and with Chris Smalls. Hi, Jacob.
Hey, Brian. Hey, Chris. How's it going? Nice to be talking to you. So in Elizabeth, New Jersey today, we are calling for a workers' way forward. And uniquely, we're calling to free all ICE detainees because we know that Amazon has been complicit in the horrible incarceration and in detaining of human beings in this crisis. Also, we're calling for the billionaires in Amazon to pay. I am a part of a group of workers and advocates from northern New Jersey. We are going to be gathering in Elizabeth for a caravan to demand safe working conditions for all, freeing all ICE detainees and workers' way forward. We are calling on Amazon to pay unlimited sick leave and provide protection and safe working conditions to workers as COVID-19 spreads through the warehouses. This has to end. At the Elizabeth Detention Center and hundreds of other detention centers, immigrant detainees are being held without charges or trial and are facing death sentences as this coronavirus rips through the jails, and they must be all freed immediately. And Chris, I know we've spoken on the phone the other night, and we are really rooting for you, and we are all the way there with you for solidarity today.
Thank you, brother. Appreciate it.
Jacob, thank you. And Chris, as you go, are you thinking about by what metrics, since you brought up how Amazon is run by metrics, by what metric will you measure the success of these May Day actions today?
Well, we already won. We got the world on notice today. I believe everybody in the world is watching this today, internationally. I've been up since 4 a.m. talking to journalists and media outlets from all over the world. So our message is out there that this company has failed. These companies have failed to protect their employees, their workforce. They failed to protect their communities. They failed the consumers because we are bringing the virus home to the communities. Possibly the consumers are ordering items that are coming home with the virus. We got to take all of that into consideration. So I don't need to measure anything. I believe that we won already. It's time for the company to respond. And if they don't, there will be further action. We're not going to stop. We're going to continue to fight and take the power back. We never dealt with this before in history. And this is the time to do it. This is the time to prove that we're really the United States of America.
Chris Smalls, whose story has become a rallying cry for frontline essential workers since he was fired from his Staten Island Amazon warehouse job in March. Thank you so much for your time since you've been up since 4 o'clock, you say, doing media, and I know you have a lot more to do. Thank you very much. Good luck.
Thank you. Take care.
Brian Lehrer, a Daily Politics podcast, is obviously also a Daily Coronavirus podcast under the circumstances in our country right now. We'll keep staying on top of things to serve you the best we can. And remember, this podcast is excerpted from my live weekday call-in show, The Brian Lehrer Show. If you want to be a caller or just hear it live, it's from 10 a.m. to noon Eastern Time on WNYC Radio in New York, or online at WNYC.org. You can also tweet a question at us anytime. Just tweet @Brian Lehrer. Thanks for listening today.